Hospitalitychain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, Hospitalitychain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace. Welcome to another episode of the Fell Into Food Podcast. I am your host, Chef Jeff Fell, and with me today is Lindsay Ruffin, and he has an incredibly interesting story on how he fell into food, as it had nothing to do with food and his background. So, Lindsay, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me, Jeff.
I want to dig right into it, and I want people to know how you fell into food, because when you told me the story, I was kind of flabbergasted at how someone from the IT world completely, I guess it's kind of IT with what you're doing now. I mean, it has some application, but in principle, it didn't really connect. So why don't you go ahead and just tell the 50,000 foot of that story and let's dig in.
Yeah, my background serves me really well now. I got started in IT a long time ago. I got my first computer in 87 or 88. My parents were really forward thinking on that. I don't know how, because nobody had computers back then. And I went to college on a scholarship, got, you know, Army scholarship, went and got an IT degree, and then did my 4 years as an officer and got another degree along the way. And that's when I began my IT career. And I spent about 15 years building computer networks for the private sector and the federal government. And then I just hit the wall. I didn't love it anymore. I really didn't love working for the different managers that I was working for. And I had to find something else to do because I just could not do this anymore. And the only other thing I knew how to do was photography. I had a photography hobby and I turned it into a business, which there's a saying about doing that. And it's a mistake and it really is. But that was the only other option that I had. Mm-hmm. So I started a headshot photography business, which turned into an event photography business. And along the way, I was learning marketing because I didn't know before I started a business that you really need to have all these marketing skills. And I didn't know anything about that, marketing and business skills overall. And so through the process of teaching myself marketing, I started teaching myself video marketing, standing in front of the camera for the first time, because usually I was just pointing the camera at other people. And that's how I learned video marketing and started getting good at it. Good enough that other local business owners were seeing me and saying, hey, can you help me make videos to promote my business? And so I had this side hustle within my photography business where I'm working with business owners to create marketing videos for their businesses. And that's how I got into the video side. And eventually what really happened with specific to the cooking is I was sitting at home one day, I think it was a Saturday, watching a cooking show on PBS. And I just said, you know what? I'll bet I can produce a cooking show as good or better than the one I'm looking at right now. And so I had to reach out and find a local chef because I didn't know any chefs at that time. And I found somebody who was willing to give it a shot. So we started producing a cooking show out of her apartment and it ended up looking exactly as I had intended to look. And so it just was a personal project and we did dozens of episodes and then it just kind of went away. It was not really something that it wasn't a business at that point. It was just a personal project. And then the pandemic happened and all of these restaurants were closing. And every day you see it on the news that, you know, these restaurants are closing permanently. These folks are losing everything that they invested into it. And I'm sitting at home trying to figure out how can I be a part of the solution? What can I do to help these folks? And then I remember, yeah, you know, you do have this oddly specific skill. You know how to make a cooking show. Well, these folks can use these cooking shows to make money now that everybody's trapped in the house. Like, this is a revenue opportunity. And so I reached out and found a local caterer who I could see online who was fighting to save her business. And I said, hey, do you want to do a cooking show? Because I think this is something that will help you with your business, keep your staff employed. Like, you can make money with this. This is a way to kind of work through this pandemic. And so that's when it first became a commercial activity for me. And we started producing her cooking show. And I'm happy to say that her business is here, still survived the pandemic, doing better than ever. And that's how I got into doing cooking shows as a business pursuit.
it's crazy how food, you know, can bring people together from industries. You know, food is what makes the world go round. I love that story because there's even another layer in impact, because I think what you're doing, and when we spoke again off recording, was how it's impacted you personally from a health level. So I'd love for you to talk a little bit about how that's impacted you. And so how the business isn't just, okay, let me get someone started on a cooking video, but there's really a deeper meaning and a why behind what's driving you getting these chefs and their show started.
Yeah, man. It's like the next evolution of it. It's like these just keep unlocking new levels of it. So as I've been in this food world and just paying attention more to food and health in general and learning about ultra processed food and what that is and how pervasive it is and the impact that it has, and seeing the impacts, not just in society in general, but in my family in particular, we have a lot of high blood pressure. We have diabetes in my family, and we have a lot of Alzheimer's, dementia. It's not just old people. Like, these are conditions that you used to associate with old people, but I have, on one side of my family, on my dad's side, I have a second cousin who was 35 in 2019 and had a massive stroke where the doctors told us he wasn't going to survive 24 hours. And fortunately, he just kept on surviving and he's still here with us, but he's in a wheelchair still. That was 2019. That was 5 years ago. And he was not a fat guy. He was just a regular sized guy, like normal weight, but he just, for his blood pressure was out of control for some reason and we didn't know it. And that's on my dad's side. On my mother's side, I just have a second cousin. So again, these are not my cousins. These are the children of my cousins. And I have one that had to get a diabetic foot amputation a couple of days before Thanksgiving. So one guy had a stroke, the other guy, diabetic foot amputation. These are kids 10 to 15 years younger than me. They're grown men, but they're kids. They're younger than me. Mm-hmm. So these are disorders that you used to worry about with old people. Now we got guys in their 30s getting, you know, stroke, diabetic foot amputations. That gave it the cooking show, a new level of importance to me. It was no longer, so originally it was about helping these restaurants survive the pandemic, restaurant owners. Now it's about helping all of us survive in general, just learning, you know, chefs using a cooking show as a platform for teaching people how to eat to live, how to read labels, how to cook for yourself, how to take your favorite things that you love, and how you can simply and easily prepare it at home and have it be a nutritious version that's not poisoning you, because our food system allows the food companies to put so many untested additives in our food. We have over 10,000 food additives in the United States, whereas in Europe, they have about 400, just over 400. And they have a system where companies have to prove that their food additives are safe. We have a system where the companies do not have to prove that their food additives are safe. So we have a lot of stuff in our food, all of our food, that is illegal in countries around the world. And it's illegal because it's toxic. And you can see it in the health outcomes in the United States.
Yeah, and you just saw Red Dye 3 was just banned. I know what's crazy is that they have a couple of years to get it out of the foods, which to me is still a long time, given the volume and the speed in which Americans consume that product. You would think you could speed that up, but Red Dye 3 is at least going to be, you know, removed in the coming years. And it just shows, to your point, that there are a lot of additives in our food. And kind of switching back to it is, you know, who better than to teach, you know, the public than chefs, people in the industry. We know what is going into the food because a lot of them are restaurant owners or they've been in restaurants and they nowadays you have to pay attention to what's on that label because the guest is wanting usually a cleaner experience, or you know what is kind of hidden in the background of some of the foods, you know, like a lot of chicken is pumped full of a salt saline solution. People don't know that, but what it is, they wonder why their giant jumbo chicken breasts that's, you know, 8 ounces, 10 ounces shrinks down. It's like, well, there's a ton of water weight inside of there to make it look bigger, to charge you more money. And so that allows, you know, what you do is helping those chefs kind of get up and running. Now, I know I had a ton of questions when I got started with my podcast, started doing video work, and I wish I would have known you then, because I probably would have had a lot of these questions answered, but I didn't. Yeah. And I think what would be really cool is to kind of go through a lot of those questions and to let people know what it takes to start a cooking show, that while it can seem complex, it is simple to a degree, but there's a lot of little nuances that a lot of people have. You know, so what's the first step for a chef or anyone, right? It doesn't have to be a chef. I think I go back to the days of like Rachel Ray, right? She claims she was never a chef, but you still watched it because it was fun watching a 30-minute cooking show. Bang, bang, bang. Here's a dish that I can make at home. And it related to people. So what's the first thing? Before someone even gets started, what should someone, what's the first thing that they need to know?
Don't make this complicated. A cooking show is you standing in front of a camera and cooking and talking people through what you're doing. That's it. This is not rocket science. This is not something that you should have on your vision board for years and years and years, and you just can't figure out how to get it. Just start with your smartphone. That's really all you need. It's as simple as that. Don't complicate it. That's my first piece of advice.
But even then, okay, you have your smartphone. Okay, I have my smartphone. What do I do with it? Do I need a specific app? What settings do I need for my camera? Do I need tripods? Do I need lights? I mean, all those things come up.
So what I have here is a tabletop tripod. You would, depending on your setup, you may need a tabletop tripod or a floor standing tripod. And also I have the tripod adapter here for your phone, which they may come with your tripod, but that's it. There's no special settings on your phone. If you've ever recorded a video of anything using your phone, you didn't do any special settings for that. This is the same thing. You're going to put your phone on a tripod, or if you don't have a tripod, lean it up against a book or something and press record and just do a practice video. This is a video that nobody has to see. So just go into your kitchen, set things up the way you think they should be, hit record, and do a walkthrough. You can actually cook something, or you can just talk through cooking something. You can make a sandwich. The point is, set up the camera somewhere, hit record, make a video so that you then have something that you can review, and you're going to learn from that. And from that, you can make another video that's better than the first one and make another one that's better than the second one until you get to where you feel like you have something that you can upload to YouTube for the world to see. But it really is as simple as pressing the red button, standing in front of the camera, cooking and talking, or making a sandwich and talking. That first video that nobody has to see, is there's nothing complicated at all about making that video.
Yeah. And to your point, you have to get comfortable being in front of a camera. It's funny how a lot of times, you know, I work out of a studio and someone we hit the record button and everyone just, they freeze up. They, I don't know what to say. Just start talking and then review yourself. I know it took me quite a little bit of time to get used to one, hearing my own voice. A lot of people don't like to hear themselves or see themselves on camera for that fact. So you have to get comfortable. Then to your point, you'll start to identify those weird tics. When we get nervous, we all have tics, weird, awkward silences. You don't know what else to say. So you usually will use a filler word. I know it's one of the biggest things that I use was reviewing my video and audio to see what are my tics and then trying to keep that almost as subconsciously. Because if you constantly think of it, then you get paralyzed and you want to say those words again. It's better to always just pause and have a blank than nothing than to say those words, in my opinion. Also, to your point, so people could do this just while they're cooking their dinner for their family, right? Who cares about the background noise? Who cares about what's going on, little kids? Just record yourself cooking a meal and talking as if you were showing your grandma or your mom, hey, this is what I'm cooking today, and this is what I'm doing.
For that video, that's it.
Yeah. Okay, someone gets rolling. They're like, all right, cool. I got my phone. I'm doing some good stuff. But, you know, from maybe even a lighting standpoint or even an audio standpoint, I know nowadays, you know, as things get progressed, and the biggest thing is just to do it, right? Start, just do it. But, you know, let's layer upon that. What kind of lighting would you suggest for a beginner or somebody that needs it and or a microphone?
For the lighting, an LED panel, these things are really, really inexpensive now. You can get an LED panel for less than $200, probably even $150 or less than that. And that's going to be your video light. That's a proper video light. A lot of folks have ring lights. If you already have that, go ahead and use it. I don't recommend those. If you don't have one, get a LED panel, which is just a flat. It's like a small TV screen, except it's not a TV. It's just a bunch of little light bulbs in it. And the reason for that is with an LED panel, if you wear glasses, you're able to position the light in such a way that it doesn't reflect in your glasses. Whereas if you're using a light ring, the correct way to use that is to put it so that your face is in the, and when you do that, you're going to get a lot of glare in your glasses if you wear glasses. So that's your lighting. For the audio, a wireless mic, and you can get these again for less than between $200 and $400, depending on which mic you get and the features that it has available to it. But for a couple of $100s, you can get an excellent wireless mic system that will significantly improve the quality of your audio. So now you have your phone as your camera, your wireless microphone, and your video light. As far as equipment, that's it. That's really all you need.
Now, okay, so I got all the equipment, right? I'm a chef. I'm like, all right, Lindsay, I got all the equipment. I listened to what you said. I'm going to use my camera. I picked up a light for $100. I found some wireless mic, whether that be a shotgun or, again, like wireless, like today. I'm using a wireless mic that works great. And do I need, kind of getting to the technicals of it, do I need to have a stitch? Do I need to have a tagline? Do I need to have like a theme of my cooking show? Like, what's your recommendation for people when they say, what do I cook on my show?
Yeah. Start with what you're good at. And, cause we don't want to start the show with experiments, but, what are you eating? Like most people who would be candidates or thinking about starting a cooking show are cooking every day or cooking most days. Cook that. That's all you have to do. Just teach people. You can, I mean, there's so many different things you can do. Start with what you know, and then you can give yourself different challenges, like making a healthy version of restaurant favorites, like the Chick-fil-A chicken sandwich, for example, 55 ingredients in their chicken sandwich. I'll bet if you make it at home, you could do it with less than 55 ingredients. So how about, you know, something like that? Don't complicate it, chef. Don't, you know, what do you, you know, if you're a chef or a great home cook, that means you have a repertoire of recipes that you know you're good at. Do that. That's it.
But what happens though when you start to run out, right? I mean, if depending on what's your recommendation, I guess, let's take a step back. Of like, how much content should you be producing per day, per week, per month, per year to be on a good basis? And how long do you have to do that? And then again, at some point, right, if you're a chef, yeah, you probably have a pretty big bag of recipes, but let's say it's that kind of middle ground of it's a cook that, you know, is a lead cooker and they're like, oh, I love doing these type of cooking shows, or I want to, but they may not have that repertoire of recipes. Like, again, how frequent, and then what do they do when they kind of run out of that original bag of recipes?
Okay. One. So YouTube is what the channel that I'm always promoting for your cooking show. That's the best home for it. And your recipe for success on YouTube is one episode per week. So you're going to do one cooking video per week. That's 50 in a year. Where are your recipes going to come from? You start with what you know, and then you start drawing inspiration from other places. So you can, you know, an easy way to get inspiration is to subscribe to magazines like, you know, Food Network or Bon Appetit, or, you know, there are a bunch of food magazines where it's pretty much a whole magazine full of recipes. So you have places where you can go to draw inspiration, as well as YouTube, what other people are doing. You can take recipes that other folks have done and draw inspiration from it. Like, it's not like you have to invent every recipe that you're making or any of them. Because at this point in human history, what are you really going to come up with that was original to you? So it's not like you got to reinvent these recipes or come up with new ones. You can just take traditional favorites and put your spin on it. You can make vegan versions of things if you're into that. You can just make a lower salt or low salt version. You can make gluten-free. There's so many different avenues that you can approach that from, that coming up with recipes really shouldn't be a problem.
Okay. How long should an episode be, right? What's that sweet spot for the viewer, you know, in today's age where everything is just so like quick snippet? What's kind of the ideal length for these cooking shows?
There is no ideal length. And it's actually a myth that people only want short stuff. If you think about the audience for your cooking show, it's a person who doesn't know how to make the dish. So you're not doing them a service by cutting a 20-minute recipe down to 5 minutes, because all of these things that you left out because you think it's, you know, self-explanatory, or it's not self-explanatory for somebody who does not have your background in the kitchen. Maybe you had a great cook in your home and in your family who taught you all these things, and you have years of experience from your childhood that you're drawing from to make these recipes. Everybody doesn't have that. Everybody didn't have a great cooking inspiration in their home, or hasn't gone to a culinary school or whatever. So the time that it takes to make the dish is how long that video should be. And the person who needs to learn how to make that dish is going to stick with you for the entire duration of that video. Whereas if you deliver them a 25% version of it, that you're going to leave them frustrated because the dish is not going to come out right, because they didn't do something that they didn't know to do because you didn't show them.
Mm-hmm. How long? Okay, so 50 episodes a year can sound daunting to some people, even though it's really not that much if you really think about it. How long should someone getting into this, how long do they really need to make a commitment to start seeing an audience? I know we're in an age of instant gratification, and people say, I've put out 20 episodes and I've had 6 views on each one, and that's it, and I've got 10 subscribers. Right? Maybe it's friends, family, even 50. How do I grow my platform into something? Because ultimately where we're going to get to is monetization, right? I mean, some people obviously do it because they love it. But the average person is probably not just going to take the time to sit there and record a full on cooking video if there's no monetization. So how long can we expect realistic results?
Well, you do have to love it. You have to love the process, because the way I explain it is, you know, you don't take up golf saying, all right, how long is this going to take? This is a part of your life now. A cooking show is a big enough commitment that this is part of your life. This is something that you do. People will know, like people who play golf, everybody who knows them knows they're a golfer, because certain time of the year, they're gone. You know where they are on the weekend. That's what they do. Same with bowling. Same with yoga. If you take up yoga, you don't say, okay, how long is this going to take before it works? Like, that's not how, that's not what this is. So a cooking show is about food education. It's about your passion for food, your passion for educating people about food. That's a journey, not a destination. So when you take the right approach to it, you're not going to end up frustrated about not having achieved some arbitrary benchmark by some arbitrary period of time. That said, we do want to make money from this cooking show. And so what I tell people is, you can't even begin to think about making any kind of money until you've done at least 10 consecutive weeks of publishing a weekly episode. Most people never make it to 10. You can find all kinds of, YouTube is littered with channels where people started a cooking show and they did 2 or 3 episodes, or they might have half a dozen or a dozen spread over a span of 2 or 3 years. That's you don't really have a cooking show. You know, if you think about any of your favorite TV programs, past or present, they're your favorite because they came on every week. You were able to tune in, and every week at the same time that show came on, and you were able to develop a relationship with the show and the people on it because it showed up consistently. That's what you have to do with your cooking show. You got to do at least 10 consecutive weeks of episodes before you have done anything to demonstrate to the world that you're serious. When you've gotten 10 and you've done it for 10 straight weeks, now you can approach people about potentially sponsoring your show. Because you can show them, this is what I'm doing. I'm actively working on this. I'm committed to this. Whereas anything prior to that, you're just getting started and you're still figuring it out. Mm-hmm. Your episodes may not actually be good. Like you may get 10 episodes into it and you still don't really have a product that's ready for prime time, but each episode has gotten better than the one that came before it. So it varies based on the individual. Some people, a professional chef, for example, who has been running a restaurant or more than one restaurant for decades, they would have a built-in audience that they just haven't put a cooking show in front of. Mm-hmm. So as soon as they launch their channel and say, hey y'all, here's what I'm doing now, they got an instant audience. Whereas other folks who don't have that, they have to build their audience. And the way you do that is by showing up consistently over time. And there's some shortcuts that you can give yourself to increase your audience more quickly, but it all starts with you showing up and showing up consistently every single week.
Yeah, I agree on the consistency, but I think the shortcuts or the, maybe not shortcuts, but the helpers to increase, what would those be?
So I encourage people to create a cooking show that somebody benefits from besides you. So in the context of a local small business community, a cooking show can be an economic catalyst for everybody. You can go to the farmer's market and shop for ingredients and know who you're buying it from, get their contact information, their website. And so when you start the show and you're going through your ingredients and you're talking through it, hey, I got this, from Farmer Joe, these tomatoes are fantastic. I got, this spinach from where, whoever this came from, and this seasoning blend that, this business owner makes. You can, by doing that, you're incorporating other people into your show. When you've done that, now you send that video to those folks, they're going to share it with everybody, because YouTube, something we haven't discussed yet, is YouTube is the number one TV streaming app in U.S. households. Netflix is second place. YouTube is number one. So if you have a cooking show on YouTube, you have a cooking show on TV. Mm-hmm. You've done the work to create a TV cooking show. Now you've done the work to create an advertising platform where these other businesses are being showcased on the big screen TV in people's homes. So you've created something that everybody is incentivized in promoting. So now it's not just you talking about your YouTube show. When you incorporate these other business owners into it and you send them that video, they're going to send it out to everybody. And some of these farmers, that's a real hidden gem that many people don't realize from a marketing standpoint. Some of these farmers have YouTube channels that are really popular because people are just interested in what goes on a farm. Mm-hmm. And they may have some cute little baby goat that's got a million followers. So when you make a video where you've used cheese from that farmer's goats and you hand that video to that farmer and they already got a million subscribers to their channel or followers on Instagram or whatever, when they put that out, that's a whole new audience that you mm-hmm. get access to quickly. And some of those people will become subscribers to your channel, and you can grow quickly by, again, incorporating others into your show in a way that everybody wins and not just you.
Yeah, I think you've got to give before you can take, because yep. if you don't, to your point, it comes off as this big salesy pitch. And to your point, you're not adding value to the viewer, because at the end of the day, that's who you've got to, your video has to provide value to that person watching. So I think you said it right at the beginning. If you're doing it just for you and you're like, oh, this is what I like to see, well, that's great that you want to see it, but is that what your audience wants to see? And if you don't capture on that, you're never going to get anywhere. You could create 100 episodes, but if it's never tailored, tweaked, modified, and provides value, you're never going to get anything in return. I've been at it since early last year, and I'm slowly starting to see the return, like people reaching out, because I think it's that consistent quality. You just have to keep putting out. Podcasts are the same way.
Yep.
They say only 10% make it past episode 10 or something like that, mm-hmm. because it's a grind. It is a commitment, yep. and you have to just keep doing it on a consistent basis. Put something out there, because eyeballs consistently see what you're doing. What a lot of chefs, where do they make mistakes when they're starting these shows?
With professional chefs, the biggest mistake I see is they they can't get out of their own way to get started. They overcomplicate it to the point that it becomes impossible to start. They insist on, they want the biggest production ever. They, you know, and they don't have any of the resources necessary to pay for that, quite frankly. And so they create this grand vision for a cooking show that is impossible to implement. It's not even possible to get that off the ground. And so they never get started. That's the biggest mistake, is trying to create a perfect cooking show when, one, no such thing ever exists. And even if it did, you don't have the money to pay for it. So let's not go for perfection as our goal. Let's set our goal as excellence. Excellence is absolutely achievable. And a tried and true method for achieving excellence is repetitions. So you got to get started, and you got to keep putting in your reps. And that's where your excellent cooking show comes from. It's not going to come on episode one.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. All right, we've gotten our equipment. We've kind of figured out what we're going to cook. We've been doing it consistently, or we're creating the content. Now I have all this content on my phone. What do I do with it, right? There's post edits. If you said something you didn't mean to say, if you need to cut something out, what do people do with that video to kind of, again, to your point, it doesn't need to be perfect, but there's usually some edits that need to be made to make sure. What do they do with that video?
You're going to hand that off to a video editor. That's the number one mistake. Well, it's a lot of number ones I'm giving you. That's one of the people who actually get started. That's the number one mistake after getting started, is trying to edit video yourself. Video editing is a massive time-consuming task. Even when you're good at it, it's just, by its very nature, takes time. And when you're not good at it, when you're a rookie at it, it takes forever, and you're going to still produce an inferior product. So what I recommend to everybody is, don't try to be your own video editor. There's some benefit to doing enough video editing to understand a little bit about the process, because what that helps you do is avoid creating garbage for somebody else to try to fix. A lot of people think there's some miracle that can be done on the computer when stuff is not done correctly and when you record it, and that's just not true. The analogy I draw is like, if you burn up a dish, there's no fixing it on the plate. You can't fix it. Nobody else can fix it. If you burned it, there is no fixing it on the plate. It's burned. So the same applies to making videos. If you've burned the video when you made it, there's no fixing it in editing. There are things that would take you 10 seconds to correct at the time you're recording are things that can take hours to fix on the computer or not be fixable at all. So you learn that through the process of video editing, that, okay, rather than trying to fix all of this stuff on the computer, I will correct these things at the time of recording. That's the benefit of investing a little bit of time in learning video editing, but you really don't want to pursue it thinking that you're going to be your video editing solution, because you're not. You want to hand that off to a professional, and you want to hand them a quality product so that they can do a great job and turn it around quickly, and it will cost you less. Because the more time they got to spend fixing your footage versus you giving them clean footage, the more that's going to cost you, and the less happy you're going to be with the product, because it's just like cooking. You start with great ingredients, you can produce a great product. If you start with a bunch of bad ingredients, old stuff, expired, you know, on its last legs, you're not going to be able to produce an excellent dish with that. So it's the same thing applies to video editing.
Yeah, 100%. What's one of the most interesting or unique cooking shows or concepts you help someone kind of create or develop?
I did a business chat one time. We did a one season of that with that caterer that when I started with the pandemic, we had a regular cooking show, and we also, after a while, we spun it off and, well, not spun it off, added to it. And we had a business chat where it was basically a talk show in her kitchen. She has a 4,400 square foot commercial kitchen. And so we would normally do the cooking show there. Well, we still continue to do it there, but she would have a guest. And so she's cooking And these were all business owners. So she's cooking and having the conversation with the business owner about business. Businesses of various different types, but just it was a business talk show hosted in the context of a cooking show. So she's cooking and they're having a conversation about how did this person get started? What lessons have they learned on their business journey? And, you know, this, that, and the other. And after she finished cooking, then, you know, we would cut, set the table, and then they would sit down and continue the conversation over the meal that she just prepared. So that was, I think that was the most unique thing that I've done so far.
That sounds super cool. What is a chef? So, you know, we've been talking all these questions that a lot of people probably have if they're thinking about starting a channel or a video. But what does it actually look like to work with you, right? I know one of my first questions is, are you coming on site? Are you just getting me started with kind of answering questions? Like, what does the actual experience working with you and your company look like to get up and running?
Sure. I don't work with people on site anymore. That's kind of like one of those adaptations that we all had to go through from the pandemic. I used to earn my living standing in front of people, you know, putting a camera in front of people in person. And then the pandemic made us take a whole lot of stuff online. And that was when I realized that really 95% of what I was doing, I could do online. And so that's how I work with folks. I have an online training community where my cooking show accelerator is what it's called. And that's where you can join and get access to tons of resources that cost nothing. And because I don't need to charge people to teach them how to start their show. And you can start it and you can continue it on your own if you want. I don't need to charge you for that. I can just provide the information and you go ahead and do it. But the folks who want help doing that, the folks who want guidance and to be able to ask questions and get, you know, get help specific to them, they can upgrade to the paid level of access. But it's an online training community, which is the same business model that I teach my chefs. Most of the people, because I have a survey form that people fill out to apply for access to the community. And the first question is, what are you trying to accomplish with your cooking show? And the number one answer that people choose is to create a work from home business, whether that's food industry professionals or home cooks across everybody. The number one response to that question is they want to create a work from home business. Well, the easiest way to do that is with a private online community where people pay you. They pay for access to your training resources where you're going to teach them how to cook. Or if you're a professional chef and you've got experience with restaurants or food truck or catering business or whatever, you can also get paid to teach people the business of food. So how do you open a restaurant? How do you open a food truck? So all of that is what I teach in my online community. I'm teaching you how to create your cooking show, how to set your camera up, your lighting and all of that, your audio. I review your video and tell you what to fix. And then you, once you've gotten that dialed in, now it's about the repetitions, putting out your episodes every week. And I'm holding you accountable for that every week. I want to see your new, show me your this week's episode. We've got a roll call for everybody. And then once you've gotten that foundation set where you're putting out your videos every single week, now we introduce the monetization. Which type of monetization is right for you? Do you want to get paid to teach people how to cook? Do you want to get paid to teach people the business of food? How do you, you know, what direction do you want to go? And that's how that works. It's really a fantastic business model that so many chefs would benefit from, because I know some people have gotten kind of to their end of the road, so to speak, with like, you can't running a restaurant is hard work. Running a catering business is hard physical work. You cannot do that kind of business forever. And if you haven't created a revenue stream outside of that, then where does the money come from when you can't or don't want to continue doing that? And what I propose to people is that revenue stream is education, teaching what you know. And you can do this from the comfort of your home with a laptop. And that's the business model that I implement. That's the business model that I teach.
Yeah, but it's also like having an accountability coach, right? It's to a degree, right? You have information. It's almost like, you know, a personal trainer, right? Most of us know how to do a push-up, a sit-up, a pull-up, basic exercises. You can look them up online. There's no big secret of like, do this exercise, that exercise. But it adds another layer of depth when you're accountable to somebody, not just yourself, right? I know some people have a lot of trouble keeping themselves accountable. But as soon as you put, you know, some skin in the game, some money in the game, and there's a personal trainer involved, and okay, even if it's, I'm paying this guy $30 an hour, and I'm doing a 2-hour workout, I want to get value out of my $60. I don't want it to just be dumped down the drain. So it sounds like it's a lot of that too, is that you can help hold these folks accountable, but you're obviously providing a service and information. And Then they're like, again, it's just that push of like, I got to get a video out. Lindsay wants to see it next week. And if I don't have it, I know I'm going to get grilled. And he's going to be like, What are you doing here? Why are you wasting your money and my time if you're not going to actually commit? So it sounds like that as well as part of what you're providing. Yeah.
I tell people that what I provide is three things. And this is what most people need: a plan, what to do, support, help doing it, and accountability, making sure you do it. So that, you know, most folks, okay, I don't know what to do. You need a plan. Okay, now I've told you what to do and you're trying, but you didn't quite get it right. That's where the support comes from. And the accountability is if you're not trying, if you've been provided with the plan, so it's no longer that you don't know what to do, you just haven't been doing it. And every week, okay, where's your video? Where's your video? Where's your video? Eventually, you know, your conscience starts to work on you. Like, you know what? He's right. Like, I said I wanted to do this. Why am I not doing it? He's taking away all of the excuses. So I need to step up and do what I said I wanted to do. And that accountability part is huge. And it's not a weakness. We all win together. Nobody accomplishes anything of any significance by themselves. And a cooking show is absolutely a team sport. You look at any cooking show or any TV program you've ever seen, at the end, they show all these credits, all of these different people who are involved in the production of whatever it is you just watched. You're not going to be able to duplicate that by yourself. So we all need a team. It's not a deficiency. It's just, that's what makes the world go round.
All right, let's get in the weeds and have some fun questions. What's your favorite food to cook?
You looking at the worst cook on the earth? And the reason is because I've never had to. I have so many fantastic cooks in my family. I've never had to, that's just never been an issue. And then now that I've fallen into food, not only do I have great cooks in my family, I got so many great professional chefs, which has taken my food experience to another level, man. Like, basic stuff like, I had one chef made a vegetable soup, and I'm like, this is the best vegetable soup I ever had in my life. It's just vegetable soup. But what she did with it, I had another chef. I used to say, I'm at least a grilled cheese level cook. And I worked with a chef that we made a grilled cheese in one of her episodes, and seeing what she had done with it and how next level it was, I was like, damn, I can't even make a grilled cheese right. So,
all right, I'll flip it. What's your favorite thing to eat then? Since you have all these awesome, you know, people in your life, what's your favorite thing to eat?
Put some heat in it. I don't care what it is. If it's spicy, I like it.
You know what's a good one? I think I mentioned it on a previous episode. I was down in Tennessee and they did a rendition of shrimp and grits. That they did a sweet and spicy, like they put I think they put some brown sugar in the grits, and then they also added, I don't know if it was Cholula, some sort of hot sauce to it. It just gave this level of depth that I had never experienced with shrimp and grits. Usually you have some nice heat, but then there was this sweetness to it. Oh my God, it just blew my mind. And I was like, yes, this is the ultimate combination of heat and sweet.
Give it some kick and I love it.
Absolutely. What, you know, is there any chef that you ever dreamed of, like, oh man, you know, it'd be really cool if so-and-so had a show, or is there any particular person that you're like, man, I want them to give me a call so I can help them, or we can get a show up and running?
Not any individual. There's just so much talent out here. I want all of the chefs, because we really need you all of you. Because of the scale of this public health crisis that we're in. And I want folks to get out of the mindset of thinking that somebody needs to give them a shot, like I need to give them a shot, or the Food Network needs to give them a shot. YouTube is offering everybody a shot all day, every day. So the chef who I wish I was working with is the chef who thinks they have something to offer and they're not offering it because there's nothing stopping them. I just want everybody who has something to say about food to just get started, get out of your own way and get started. Cause, for me to want to work with somebody, it would be somebody who I already knew. And there's so many fantastic people out here who we don't know because they've not let us see them.
Yeah. I love it. Love it. This has been a riveting conversation. I love all the knowledge that you bring to it. Again, even from an outside perspective, coming IT, coming into food, where do people go if they want to check out what you're doing, what you've helped people do? Where do they go?
ParkRoadStudios.com. My website, you go there and it will take you everywhere else that you need to go. ParkRoadStudios.com.
All right. I'll throw that into the show notes. That way anyone can find it as well. Any last parting words? I think that last piece you said was kind of hit the nail on the coffin as far as what people should need. But anything else?
Please start, chef. Please start. That's it.
All right. You heard it from Lindsay. Just get started. Throw a camera up, record yourself. You just never know what value you might bring to somebody. So until next time, we'll catch you on the sunny side.
HospitalityChain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, HospitalityChain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace.